is known to the world as a Zen bastard. He was given that name by, was it Stuart Brand, the...
Ken Kesey.
Ken Kesey, right.
He and I were, Stuart Brand had invited both of us to co-edit the last supplement to the Whole Earth Catalog. And we did a lot of reviews in it, and it was just based on one little review, like one sentence, of a beautiful book of art, of cartoons, far-out cartoons. And so I just said, it made me say far out for the first time. And Kesey said, you Zen bastard. And the name stuck.
I have someone just passed me a note. I said, what about Rumpel Foreskin? You're also, that's another one of your pseudonyms.
Yes, that was when I had my own radio show in San Francisco. And I said, I want... You know, it was a call-in show. And so I just thought that would be a funny name for people who were angry and calling in. It would sort of diffuse the anger. It's like, hello, let me speak to Rumpel Foreskin.
Wow.
And then I also used it as the title of a column I did in the early 70s, a syndicated column to alternative papers around the country. So, yeah, those are my two AKAs.
Well, you also probably are listed in Who's Who, as the editor of one of the very first of the so-called underground publications in the United States, The Realist, and maybe the foremost of the underground publications.
I'm in Who's Who? That's Who's Who?
I think so, aren't you?
I know I was in Who's Who in America, where you just filled out a form, so where it said a political affiliation, I just put down independent dupe, and that's how it came out. But when I was in San Francisco, I had the radio show under the name Rumpel Foreskin. I tried to get in the phone book, and they would only allow me to put Foreskin Rumpel, like they do with any other name.
Ah. Well, But that doesn't tell us anything about the Realist. Maybe you should say something about The Realist.
Oh, well, it was a magazine that I edited and published and left with. It started in 1958. It was a satirical magazine.
Well, it started as a satirical magazine, but then it began to report on certain aspects of the real world that sounded like satire, but they were actually...
Oh, yeah.
Actually,
no, it had a lot of investigative journalism.
The MS, as Lenny Bruce would say.
Yes, I made a decision that I was not going to label an article as satire or journalism because I didn't want to... take away the pleasure from readers of discerning for themselves what was journalism and what was satire. And that quality is needed these days more than ever. That ability. I know I've lost the ability to tell the difference.
And recently you sent me an email asking for information about Jay Washington. You want to talk about who Jay Washington was?
Jerome Washington was the first black yippie. And, in fact, when we were going to go to Chicago in 1968, he, to protest the Democratic Convention, since it was under their watch at that point that the Vietnam War was escalating. And
he contacted the Blackstone Rangers, right?
That's right, yes, yes.
Who were the black... I hate to say gang, but I guess that's what they were.
Community, they could.
They were a very organized people's militia, I guess you would say, and they were, they were the progenitors of the Black Panthers, at least in Chicago.
In Chicago, because I know at that time the Black Panthers were active,
you're right.
Especially in Oakland,
right.
And I don't know. It was later that I'm not sure when the Chicago branch started, but it was certainly there in the next year, 1969, when Fred Hampton, who was a leader of the Black Panthers in Chicago, got shot in his bed while he was sleeping by sort of a willing coalition of the Chicago police and the FBI. Mm.
Well, and subsequently, the district attorney who led that raid was indicted for it and, I believe, sent to prison.
Hanrahan,
right?
Oh, well, I guess the system works.
Yes. Yes, it does. Well, I came up with a tape of Jay Washington that I'm going to play when we're done, Paul, right after he got out of prison. And he was sent to prison for murder, where he worked his way into the library and managed somehow to publish a prison newspaper, one of the best of the prison newspapers. He won all kinds of awards for it. And then he actually reported something that happened in the prison. And within 24 hours, he was packed up and shipped to Attica. You remember?
Yeah, I know. There was certainly a cause and effect there.
Yes. Yes, and we were in touch with him and trying for a while to help him. I don't know how helpful we were. He managed to get himself out of prison through his own efforts and the efforts of his network of friends outside. But
I think that helped a lot, you know, just maintaining that contact with us while he was there. I was able to visit him.
Mm-hmm.
In prison, and we just kept on corresponding when I couldn't visit. And that means a lot to any prisoner, you know, to not lose that tie to the outside world.
Mm-hmm. Well, you wanted some information about him. Maybe there are some people listening who remember him and can give you the rest of the...
Well, it wasn't me. It was a woman who was writing just a 1,000-word article on him. So
I see.
I don't think... She wanted mainly details of his, you know, the standard stuff about education and birth and all of that, birthday. And I only met him in 1967, and we became friends at the October 1967 march on the Pentagon when we were both urinating on the Department of Justice building when we were tear gassed. You know,
no, much better than urinating on a fire.
Well, yeah, you know, a hammer can be used for good or bad.
Yeah, once someone asked me, did you ever hear anything bad about Paul Krasner? And I said, the only thing I can ever remember about him that I thought, that he thought was funny and I didn't, was when we were at the Sound Out Festival in Woodstock, New York. We had a little campfire. And he put it out by natural means, and it really smelled terrible. If you've ever had that experience of being near a fire that's been put out by that particular kind of natural means, you know,
I had
exactly
no idea. You know, I thought that the fire would burn out. Well, you know, if you hadn't served that asparagus souffle,
maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. That was it. So, you write also for the New York Press?
Yes, my...
Every other week you have a column there?
Well, now it's every week.
Every week?
Except the issue that's just out, but I'll have a nice little one next week. I had been doing it every other week, a longer column, but now I'm doing one every week and a short one, which I kind of like better because... you can be right up to the minute topically. And you know, for 500 words, it's like a net in that particular tennis game that, you know, in terms of the framing, what you have to fit it into that frame. So make it nice and tight.
Well, as one of the people who was an unindicted co-conspirator in the Chicago 8 trial, you must have had some feelings about the demonstrations against the Republican National Committee meetings in New York.
Well,
the convention.
I watched 4 solid hours of on that first Sunday on C-SPAN, and you know, as disgusted as I would be with the convention per se, I was just inspired by the march, and. And in fact, take issue with one of the columnists for the New York Press who wrote a thing kind of ridiculing the marchers. And I thought that they were just exercising the First Amendment rights as well as love for the country, you know. Not the government, the country. I make a distinction.
No, I think it's the essence. It's the most patriotic thing that you can do in the face of what's been happening to this country, to protest, to insist
but
on...
You know, there are similarities in terms of idealism and creativity.
Absolutely. These were wonderfully creative demonstrations.
My favorite placard says, let's evolve already. there are differences, too. Because you remember when we were organizing in 1968, we got our hands all messy with mimeograph ink, getting
right.
flyers ready. And this event was organized largely on the Internet. That's one of the main differences, just in terms of how many people are reached with information simultaneously and with immediacy and widespread and inexpensive. So it's changed the nature of protest demonstrations, Internet has. And also there were I think that mostly in 68 the protests were by children of the white middle class, but now they've become multi-ethnic, multi-generational, multi-gender even. And there are a myriad of causes. You know, then we had just a few: civil rights, the war in Vietnam, decriminalized marijuana, reproductive rights, and
free bathrooms.
What?
Free pay toilets.
Oh, free pay toilets. Yes, that
right.
was a rider on the statue. but now, you know, I could make a list of 25 to 50 different causes, and so then our slogan and our sort of theme song was "We Shall Overcome," and now it's "We Shall Overlap." So anyway, was Jerome on your program? Is that where the tape is from?
Yes, it is. And it was, I think, in 88 when he got out of prison.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. And he read from one of his stories, or from a few of his stories. Jerome was a pen writer. He was... identified by the Penn Writers Group as a political prisoner with Salman Rushdie. I mentioned Salman Rushdie because someone erroneously, at least according to Cat Stevens, said that Cat Stevens was opposed to Salman Rushdie and that he supported the fatwa against him. But
I think he has a different spin on it now.
Yes, he apologized for that. He said that he didn't really mean that.
So he just wanted them to maim Rushdie.
Right. But now we have to find a way to get Cat Stevens out of his problem. I hope he has at least 9 lives.
It was funny because when I had my radio program in San Francisco in 1971, and that's when Peace Train, I was playing that a lot. So he's come a long way, baby.
Well, so
and
has,
also,
so
you know, I heard two comedians tonight, Dennis Miller and Jon Stewart, at the opposite ends of the spectrum, both said, you know, if your last name is Islam, you might as well just pack a lunch and take easy shoes, shoes to take off and on for the airport trip.
Yeah, I guess that's unfortunately the truth.
Or Ted Kennedy.
Right.
Right. Or Ted. Right. Ted Kennedy, Islam. Right.
Well, is that an Islamic name, Kennedy?
Sure, that's the Irish group, the Irish branch of Muslims.
I see.
Definitely.
I see. Well, they talk about the Boston Brahmins, but that's not Islam. That's a Hindu, isn't it? Brahmins?
I hadn't thought of it, but I guess you're right.
Yeah.
Yes. I know the New York Yankees were always just northerners to Louisiana.
Well, so now you have your fourth album, isn't it?
No, my sixth.
Sixth?
Yeah.
So you're a recording star.
No, I'm a recording artist. a star is, of course, is in the mind of the beholder, but, you know, I still get mistaken for Paul Kantner.
Uh-huh. Isn't this Paul Kantner? We're talking to his mic.
Oh, I'm sorry. Isn't this Steve Post?
Right. Well, is there anything in particular on the album that you you don't want played for the New York audience, or is there something that you do want played? I want to follow your lead.
I have nothing to hide. I'm just I'm trying to remember what tracks have language. I don't want to get you guys in trouble. So
after midnight, we pretty much have freedom of expression, unfettered by the FCC. At least they say that this is a window where certain liberties are allowed. They assume that impressionable school children are all abandoned now. I don't feel that they're going to be threatened particularly by hearing the words that the school children have scrawled all over the schools on the radio, confirming their lingual freedom.
Well, let's see. Maybe candy bar candidates?
Okay. Candy bar candidates. Do you happen to know what cut that is on the album?
I think it's the third. Let me see. Let's see. Right here. Mm-hmm. It is... should be one, two... third. It should be the third cut.
Well, we'll play the third cut in any case. But I see so many quotes on the album from people like Mort Saul and John Stewart and Bill Maher.
Oh, yeah, but I'm quoting them.
They're not talking about you?
No, they're talking
about Bush. Margaret Cho says George Bush is not Hitler, he would be if he applied himself. I have to leave out a word there. If he applied himself.
Midnight, you could say what you want. Oh, okay, well, if he bleeping applied himself.
himself. And Jay Leno said the United States is putting together a constitution now for Iraq. Why don't we just give them ours? It served us so well for 200 years, and now we don't appear to be using it anymore. So what the hell?
You know, Bob, speaking of Jay Leno, there was an interview with him in the L.A. Weekly, and it was surprising, but he said that he thinks that Bush pulled the wool over the American public's eyes, and you know, because you remember he was sort of like a cheerleader for a while. So I think that represents a good portion of Americans who suddenly, have a wake-up call when they see that not only does the emperor have no clothes, but he's walking around with an erection.
Mm. Well, before, I'm going to play your the cut three that you asked me to play, or that you recommended that I play, but I want to ask you to see if you remember John Kerry and the Kerry Committee.
What was that?
Do you remember the Kerry Committee in investigating the allegations about Iran-Contra and drugs?
Was that Bob Kerry or John Kerry?
John Kerry.
I had forgotten about it until you mentioned that, actually. What was his position? Do you recall?
Well, you know, the report was kind of ambiguous. You know, he would say that it appears that this is true and that that's true, but of course there is this the denial, and although there doesn't seem to be any evidence except the evidence that supports the allegations.
He's a very careful guy, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you can't be too careful.
Oh, yes, you can.
This album is being recorded in May, and it will not be released until September. So there's no way of knowing what's going to happen between now and then. The good news is that Bush gets impeached. The bad news is that Cheney becomes president. which is a demotion. The bad news is that Cheney had his pacemaker checked and it's in good condition. The good news is that Rudy Giuliani is giving him a microwave for Christmas. So now to talk a little bit about the campaign in the ass. Let's start with Wesley Clark. Remember him? He came into the race late and left early. This is an exact answer that he gave when reporters asked him, would you have voted to go to war? Because after all, this is a general. He says, I would have voted to go to war. I mean, no, I would probably have voted against it. And come to think, I would never have voted for the war. That decision turned out to be a major blunder, and I have always been consistent about that. All right. So then, a few weeks later, another reporter asked him, would you have voted to go to war? Now he was seasoned, and he said, okay, I would have voted for the war at the time, but now I'm against it. Besides, I would never have voted for the war. Well, I may have voted for it at the time, but now I'm against it. How am I doing in the polls? So he came in late and was relatively unknown, except by corporals that he used to harass. And so he had his volunteers give out Clark bars to everybody to help him gain name recognition. You remember Clark bars? They gave you cavities and filled them simultaneously. So I started thinking of what would the other candidates, what would their candy bars be? What would be appropriate for them? So Richard Gephardt. Gephardt also flip-flopped. And he was the one who wrote the resolution giving permission to Bush to have a preemptive strike. But and then he dropped out, too. So Gephardt would certainly be Milk Duds. Al Sharpton was sort of a Hershey bar with nuts. Joe Lieberman. At first I thought, well, how about Jujubes? And then I thought, no, no, you know, we don't want to give fodder to the anti-Semites. And what would really, truly work for him, he made so much of being Jewish himself. And in that whiny voice, I think when he went to Israel, he went to the whining wall. But I thought a more appropriate candy for Lieberman would be Snickers. Because he always made me snicker. When he was trying to court the Latino vote, and he called his wife and he said, ¿Qué pasa, Hadassah? You know, just want a snicker. Now, Dennis Kucinich, who was my dream candidate, who obviously would, for somebody to come out and say, just to surrender to idealism instead of pandering, and to say there should, instead of a War Department, be a Peace Department. I don't know if you remember, but the Department of Defense used to be the Department of War, but only the name changed. I think that's one of Bush's slogans, four more wars. They should have that on TV. Besides laugh tracks, they should have groan tracks. You know. And why is it you can go to a movie and you can laugh out loud, but you have to hurt your heart by stifling your sobs at a sad movie? That's just a thought. All right, here's another thought. Everything is getting compacted. That's why hello became high. That's why even now somebody, instead of saying to make a long story short, they just say long story short. You know, just get condensed. It's condensation because of global warming. So Kucinich, who wants to withdraw now, as opposed to John Kerry, who says we have to stay there. And the moment the supreme irony will come, if he were elected and somebody from Iraq Veterans Against the War tells the Congressional Investigating Committee, who wants to be the last man to die for a mistake? Deja vu, Kerry? And I'm going to vote for him. I voted for Ralph Nader in 2000, but I won't vote for him this time because it's different. I think Arianna Huffington said it best, which is, when the house is burning down, you don't start renovating. Howard Dean. Howard Dean, I think, would be Altoids. Yeah. Furiously strong. You know, it's a shame that the media caricature of him overshadowed the fact that he made the war an issue in the campaign.
Yeah.
Okay, then is John Edwards. He is, like, so cuddly and sweet and oozing, and he would have to be a Twinkie. You know, not just a cream-filled Twinkie, but, I mean, a fried Twinkie. A southern fried Twinkie. Just oozing. And I guess Nader would be Sour Patch. Okay, now Kerry. Kerry is was the most interesting because, you know, was it with Payday? No, not sure. Zadnut? No. But then the perfect one for him would be Mr. Goodbar. I think, you know, there's a couple of things wrong with Kerry. I have to look upon him as a sort of like an arranged marriage. And, you know, I can learn to like him. He'll be a good provider. And at least he's better than that wife beater in the White House. But one of his flaws is because he voted for the war. He voted to give him permission to have to fight this fight and that he's now against. Which, is, you know, I mean, he has been consistent in that. When he was in Vietnam, he was proud that he killed the Vietnamese, 20 Vietnamese. Then when he got out of the Navy, he was ashamed that he had killed 20 Vietnamese. And now he's proud again. When they asked him, well, if you're against the war now, why did you vote for it? And he said, I believed my president. So I think that he's a poor judge of character. Now, it's interesting how abortion has become an issue. The Catholic Church is essentially, people in the hierarchy are saying to Kerry, well, now look, if you don't come out against abortion, then we're not going to give you a wafer on Sunday. I mean, that kind of sums it up. And the church has to have this kind of anti-abortion stance so that they can keep the conveyor belt of altar boys coming to the priests who want to molest them. Yeah, it's just simple foresight. You know? No child's behind left. Okay, thank you. Yes, okay. Put the groan check on. And then they're coming against reproductive rights from all directions. Now, here's another one who makes you think that feminism wasn't all it cracked up to be since Karen Hughes could get such a high position. Karen Hughes was and is the president's speechwriter. She was the one who advised him not to refer to the terrorists as folks. It's a dirty job, but somebody has to do it. Okay, here's a quote from Karen Hughes. She said this in response to the Million Women March in Washington for Reproductive Rights. I think that after September 11th, the American people are valuing life more and realizing that we need policies to value the dignity and worth of every life, particularly at a time when we're facing an enemy. And really, the fundamental difference between us and the terror network we fight is that we value every life. So she's now equating getting an abortion with terrorism. You know, personality shouldn't mean that much, but you would think that John Kerry had aborted his inner child. A style. It's too bad. I mean, he speaks in the key of B flat. I say that I will get it, you know, and he maintains that. And so he's doing now what every candidate has to do, which is get interviewed on MTV. And so they ask him, do you like hip hop? And he goes, yes, I like hip hop. I think it's, I like the anger and I like the poetry. You know, and then they ask him, well, are you cool? If I were cool, then I wouldn't say I was cool, would I? You know, so it's bizarre. But the main thing is that even though Kerry is beating Bush in the polls now at this point, Bush is getting more points for being able to deal with terrorists. I mean, that probably is changing as we speak. So Kerry has to be able to get inside the minds of a terrorist to understand. You know, it's not like in this country. Here we have a suicide hotline where people just call and the people at the hotline say, oh, all I get is complainers and fetchers. Whereas the suicide bombers, for better or worse, are really idealistic about what they're doing. They're also selfish, because, you know, they want to go to Nirvana as martyrs and meet those 72 virgins awaiting them. Plus, part of the folklore is that they can achieve orgasms that last 600 years. 600 years. I know with my luck, at 150 years, I'd have a premature ejaculation. There's no objective standards to judge at the precise moment that a premature ejaculation becomes a mature ejaculation. I don't even know what a mature ejaculation is. But I think John Kerry has them. Teresa, I feel some great spasms in my groin area. They're becoming almost uncontrollable, but I say, bring it on! Okay. Any questions? Yes?
Well, I have some questions, Paul. I mean, I thought that are you there still?
Yes.
Yeah, I have some questions. First, that bring it on, that's a quote from George Bush, isn't it?
Well, what Bush said in terms of, terrorists attacking U.S. military, he said, bring them on. And then I'm trying to remember the context that John Kerry said, bring it on, but he was talking about the confrontation with Bush, bring the campaign on, something sort of like that. You know, I neglected, when I was doing that, having the candy bar identities, I forgot to mention the one that would be appropriate for Dennis Kucinich.
Oh, what's that?
A Nutri-Grain. Because, you know, he's really very conscious of eating healthy foods. You know, you never hear anybody talking about mad tofu disease.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly not me. So anyway, what other questions do you have? That's a valid one, though. I mean, not that all your others aren't valid, too.
Oh, sure you do, Paul.
I'd be happy to validate your question. And your parking ticket.
Uh-huh. Well, okay, how's Nancy?
Nancy is fine. The listeners think that Nancy is my pet monkey.
No, I'm sure
and
you don't think that. Nancy, Paul's
I know she's
wife
my pet monkey because
was...
once they gave her an editing job and she said a monkey could do this, and then she did it.
Well, Nancy was a leading actress at WBAI.
Leading actress?
Yes, in the It's Your World and You Can Have It, which was our very first comedy program, regularly scheduled comedy program, produced by Dale Miner with some couple of people who became very well known in the movies. But those, again, those were the days, Paul. Those were the days.
Oh, I thought you were going to name names there for a minute.
Well, let me see. Bob Schlitt. Pretty well known. Any other names?
Character actor.
Is Nancy there with you?
Yes.
Well, perhaps she'd like to get on the phone and
reminisce. Perhaps she'd like to get on the phone. Would you like to get on the phone? She's saying no. Terminal shyness.
Well, who would she like me to mention as a member of that group?
Like a UN translator here.
George Coe, I guess, was the best known.
Oh, well, wait, I know. This wasn't with Video Freaks, of which she was a founder.
No, that was later. That was. So.
But there was TVTV and Bill Murray. They took some video of him. And he's now a movie star. Another American success story. You know, kids, if you have a dream and you're not a minority, it may come true. That's what they always say at the Oscars.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and the Emmys.
I remember,
and the Grammys.
I remember.
And the best of the awards shows.
Most of the people in the audience were fascinated by Nancy and wanted to know more about her. And when I heard that she had become a video freak. I thought, whoa, this is someone who should be in front of the camera rather than behind it. And then she went on to become your wife. How did you manage that?
It's a demotion. you know, the funny thing is, when I came to WBAI Studios, I was going to do commentary on that show, and I came to the studio with Jean, who is now my ex-wife, and she waited in the green room while I went into the studio and sat next to Nancy on, what was it, It's Your World and You Can Have It. And only when we got married did I learn that they never played my commentary. But that's okay. I know, you know, at an improv group, I'll tell you how, when you know you don't fit in. This is a true story.
Well,
they
didn't play. I remember what you said, Paul, and it was mostly directed to Nancy. You said, ditch these creeps and come back to my loft. I have books and magazines.
I say that to everybody.
Yeah, that's true.
It's my come on line.
Yes.
The only place it didn't work was at the Braille Institute. Knowing that you don't belong. And I heard this just yesterday from a friend who had been doing research at the Supreme Court and learned from the clerks, who really have all the power. They decide what the justices make their decisions on and do all the research. And there was one meeting where all of the members of the Supreme Court were going to be in this room. I forget for what purpose, a conference of some kind. And Sandra Day O'Connor came in wearing a Groucho Marx face, you know, with the glasses, the horn-rimmed glasses, and the nose, and the mustache. And they all kind of just glared at her. And she said to one of the clerks, it's going to be a long season. But she knew. She knew then that that they took themselves...
seriously.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, not that she's not dedicated to whatever she perceives as justice, but she didn't take herself as seriously as she took her cause.
Well, are you interested in, at all in local politics in the area that you live?
Sort of. You know, I go to the mayor's breakfast every month, but this is a very small town here, Desert Hot Springs. And so, you know, everybody gets up and does the Pledge of Allegiance.
Uh-huh.
And when it gets to the part of under God, I say inside God, just to give it a more universal feeling. And then everybody introduces themselves. So it's a conservative town, it's, you know, so the chiropractor will say, hello, my name is Dr. So-and-so, and I'm a doctor of chiropractic, and if you need my services, I'm at the corner of Palms Drive and Keebler Avenue, whatever it is.
I don't actually have an office, but I'll open the trunk of my car.
Right, because I have strong hands.
Right, and we can have a tailgate massage.
Right. All right, and then the guy who is runs the town funeral home, he gets up and says, hi, my name is Tom.
I don't actually have a funeral home, but you can come by my car any time that you die.
Right, a tailgate embalming.
Right.
So he gets up and he says, Tom and I run the mortuary on Flegel Street, and I just want to say, and he says this every month. He says, I'll be the last one in town to let you down. So one time I got up, it was just when the invasion of Iraq started.
Uh-huh.
And I got up and I said, my name is such and such. I'm a local resident and comedian and an anti-war patriot. And I heard from the back. And later some people came up to me and shook my hand and said, thanks for speaking out like that. So, anyway, I performed for the Chamber of Commerce, but they asked me to do it in a devil's costume, and so I'm in the car, I'm in the passenger seat, in my desert costume.
You agreed to do it in a devil's costume.
Well, I like the challenge. I'm used to...
Speaking of challenges, this is WBAI in New York City.
I'll say.
And
so there is... Nancy is driving me wearing my devil's costume, you know, and it had horns, and I had a three-pronged thing. And coming up in the next lane...
I'll have to explain that a little bit.
What?
You mean you had a trident.
A trident?
Right.
What did I say?
A three-pronged thing.
Oh, it's three. Well, that's what Kobe Bryant called his penis, a thing.
He did.
Yeah, but I was I meant actually a three-pronged pitchfork. That's I couldn't think of the word pitchfork.
A trident, yeah.
A trident. Well, that sounds like something that doctors recommend that you chew for your teeth.
Between meals, right?
Yeah, right. The sugarless gum, pronged. So. This van comes up on the lane beside us.
Actually, it's a body shop that I've seen near where I live, Staten Island.
What about it?
Trident, they call it.
Nuclear submarine.
They'll fix your car if you get into a little smack-up, you know.
When you said body shop, I thought you were talking about one of those things where they sell dildos. They do, you know.
They sell dildos?
Well, yeah, it's against the law to give them away.
Huh.
Okay, so anyway... So
I guess I can't top that.
Well, this isn't a competition. Or if it is, bring it on.
Well, it often becomes a spritzing contest when you talk to other people who are trying to keep up with you, Paul. You're one of the funniest guys I've met. One of the most improvisational and clever raconteurs. And I remember when you were. There was a late night television show that you were a writer for, and when it became obvious that it wasn't going to even show up in the ratings, they said, "Well, why are we wasting our time with this jerk of an MC? Let's get Paul Krasner, who is really funny and is a writer, to do monologues." And that's what happened. The last week or two of the show. You did a monologue every night, and it was wonderful.
That was fun, yeah. Yeah, it was... especially when I'd go home and watch it, and I would have the channel selector, and at that time there would be Jay Leno, and then there would be David Letterman, and I would click, and there was me. You know? it was very very surrealistic. So anyway, but, you know, let me tell you one of the funniest things that happened... Which was there I am in my devil's costume with my trident gum and my horns and all the accoutrements of well dressed Satan, and I'm in the passenger seat, and on the right this van comes, and it's from a local church group of kids, and it's filled with kids going to do their ablutions to Jesus, I suppose, and. And I wave at everybody, and we get to the next stop, the red light, and all the kids are waving back at me, but the driver holds up a Bible. And I'll tell you, it was the highlight of that day.
You weren't affected by it, though. You didn't feel that you were going to... What happens to the witch and shrivel up and turn into your shoes and...
No, I just, it was a leap of faith. I just hung on to my three-pronged things.
Maybe I should play another cut from the record, huh?
Oh, well, let's see. What might be nice? All right, how about the next cut? Four.
Now, what would be the appropriate candy bar for George W. Bush? A Mars bar. Not only because he's really an alien from another planet, still trying. He can fake it as an earthling. He still doesn't have the walk down quite. He's still... Because he struts like a rooster on steroids. But also because if we go to Mars, it would divert attention from the fact that he didn't have an exit strategy from Iraq, but he does have an exit strategy from Earth. So... I saw Ram Dass recently at the Oregon Country Fair, and he's in a wheelchair from a stroke, and he said to me, "You know, I'm really struggling to love George Bush." And I said, you know, you just gave me a 30-year flashback when you were saying, you know, I'm really struggling to love Richard Nixon. So there's a consistency in his spiritual path. But I never thought that I would miss Richard Nixon, you know? I mean, just the tapes. You know, where during the Watergate scandal, and he was being told by his associates that E. Howard Hunt, who was in on the break-in, might want $1 million as hush money. And Nixon said, we could get it, but that would be wrong. Bush would never admit it would be wrong. Even if he got the question in advance. I always wondered what he had on Tony Blair. You know, what were those videos that he said, don't worry, Tony, they're in our safe. Nobody will see them unless... So Blair became the willing coalition, actually. Plus, I think, 3 soldiers from Poland and a few third world countries that accept bribes. But if Tony Blair is Bush's poodle, Dennis Miller is his minor bird. Now, if you've seen him, you know that he's turned from some kind of liberal to some kind of conservative. And he was asked, well, why did you make this transition? And he said it happened after September 11th, and it happened when he heard people on the left comparing Bush with Hitler. And Miller kept saying, Bush is not Hitler. Hitler is Hitler. And it's not fair to compare them at all in any way. In this case, I happen to agree with Dennis Miller. I think there's a vast difference between Hitler and Bush. Hitler was elected.
Well, the differences, Paul, that's interesting that we're talking about differences. Paul?
What do you mean?
Well, what essentially is the difference between a Democrat and a Republican?
The difference between a Democrat and a Republican?
Yeah.
I think there are differences. You might not be able to tell it from some campaign speeches.
Well, let me ask you another question. What is the difference... do you know the difference between an oral and a rectal thermometer?
Is this going to be on the final?
Well, it's a matter of taste.
Oh, it's a matter of taste. I get it. Okay.
So I say that is essentially the only difference between...
You know what people who are incontinent have to do?
Incontinent? Bill is saying... Bill seems to know the answer.
Here.
Yeah.
Depends.
So what does he say is the answer?
Depends.
That's right. It depends.
To be brief.
Okay. The difference is, at this moment, the Republicans are in power. That's probably the biggest difference.
The
Democrats were in power.
At the moment, the Republicans are abusing power. The Democrats are not abusing power yet.
They're too busy seeking it.
Right. So I guess that is.
No, they are abusing power. You know, they could have voted against
for sure
giving Bush permission to be preemptive. The Democrats are not innocent. You know, everybody's saying, well, Bush is in the pockets of the National Rifle Association, and it's not even a secret. You know, and so they say, and that's why he didn't urge the Congress to vote against the renewal of the AK-47 ban. Now, what are these, a bunch of kindergarten kids that need the urging of the principal to do the right thing? So I fault the Democrats as much as the Republicans for chicken-heartedness.
Well, you know, he sold the whole country on something, I think.
Ultimately the public that's so brainwashed that even though it's finally been denied, they still believe that Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden were lovers and adopted a Chinese baby. it's the same public that buys stuff that's advertised on TV. Because they early in life, it's poor toilet training, it's being conditioned to authority so early in life that sometimes you need some kind of psychedelic just to break through.
Paul?
That brainwashing.
Paul?
Yes.
May I ask you, you said earlier Dennis Kucinich was your ideal candidate, more or less. What do you think of him, as I figured he would, since he didn't get the nomination, he's thrown his support to John Kerry.
Rather than what?
Rather than just not support him and saying it's me or...
Oh, no, well, he, you know, he, again, it's, well, that would be an egomaniac who said it's me or nobody.
Well, not nobody, just that I can't support Kerry.
Oh, well...
Publicly, at least. I might vote for him.
Well, I guess he's supporting him because the Bush administration is totally insane with power. And you'd rather have somebody in the White House who's sane with power. So it boils down to that.
Well, we ran LBJ as a peace candidate. You know.
Who did? Who's we, Tom?
That is the U.S. Remember?
Yeah, but it was the peace movement that helped get LBJ to resign. Not to resign, but to announce that he wasn't going to run for re-election.
Many years and 58,000 American deaths later.
Yeah, and Eugene McCarthy winning in New Hampshire.
Right.
So, there were those factors. But, yes, you're right. The Viet Cong should get credit. It wasn't all...
Well, there are some people who are beginning to call. Maybe we could take a few telephone calls, if that's all right with you. We're 212-209-2900, and you can call if you like and talk to Paul Krasner.
Can you get us on the web there, Paul?
You're on the radio.
I'm going to try. Were you able to?
You're on the radio.
Yes, good morning. Hello,
Paul.
Hi. Hello, Paul.
Yes.
I saw you at Coliseum Books. When was it? I think last October.
Yeah.
Okay, because it was announced over radio on Nameable that you were going to appear there reading from your new book, and I went to see you, and you were such an utter delight. I walked in earthbound. I walked out skyward. How's your daughter, Rachel?
My daughter...
Rachel, I think you went... You must have gone to see Aaron Kay.
No, I didn't. I saw his daughter's name. He spoke. There was a marvelous story you told about your daughter and yourself.
Her name,
calling down
her
to
name
the
is
Amazon.
Holly.
Excuse me?
Her name is Holly.
Holly, yes. Okay, now, you mentioned Nixon, and the name of Steve Post came up. I was delighted to hear. He had a lifetime and does have a lifetime obsession and fixation on Nixon. And he, on this radio station, when he was on the air, it might have been a Sunday, 11 to 12:30, he told a story about his tracing Nixon to his San Clemente hideout, and one day getting up to the place and the trials and tribulations in such a whimsical, witty way that Steve had with that incredible dramatic voice he had. The story was just, you know, utterly beguiling. Now, I want to say.
He actually met Nixon, and I think I've seen a photograph of him shaking Nixon's hand.
Wasn't a cardboard cutout now.
And when Bob, earlier in tonight's show, when you played the bit about of Paul, you know, and all those riffs on drugs and stuff, and an incredibly funny twist that he had on the joke where he smoked before love, he smoked before eating and walking and sleeping and thinking, and then he said he even smoked before he started to roll a joint. It was so fantastically funny. I thought to myself, who? And I flashed back to your reading at the Coliseum Bookstore, and what a delight that was. So hear it again. It's sort of double delight. Now, I have the solution for the entire world. I can guarantee at least 20 minutes of utter joy, peace, and happiness by listening to the Symphony No. 86 in D major by Franz Joseph Haydn. I tell you, this is the cure all for anybody who can gain access, you know, to...
Well, Paul Krasner is the Franz Joseph Haydn of the spoken word.
Oh, indeed. Oh, he is.
And of the written word.
And to see him in person and performance. Paul, you may remember that after your performance, I came up to you and I told you how terrific you were and that I thought you should make an audio tape of that whole performance, if you could, you know, recapture it, because you were utterly beguiling. You recall that?
Yeah, but I'm trying to avoid posterity.
Well, okay, but what about prosperity?
I've been avoiding prosperity all my life.
I see. Okay, I'm going to get off the air. It's been great talking. Oh, will you be coming to New York?
I have nothing scheduled, but neither do the terrorists.
I can wait.
Sorry.
One more question, then I'll get on. What was the format of your radio station, on your radio program in San Francisco, and could you call the best of the best for posterity? And I'll get off. Thank you very much, and goodbye.
Let's see. What was the format? Well, it was... This was in 1971, and I opened with Van Morrison singing Into the Mystic. It was like from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m., and then I closed with Van Morrison doing Madam George. And sometimes I would talk over that. It's a nine-minute song, and just beautiful. Somebody, I remember a woman called up and said, oh, that's such a beautiful song. I said, well, why aren't you listening to it instead of calling me? And then I would talk about clippings from the newspaper and things that had happened during the previous days. And I would take calls, and I would do community things. I would have everybody listening have a jar of honey if they had some, and then I played a beekeeper just talking about it and accompanying himself with a violin about the miracle of bees making honey, and then I had like this invisible network of listeners all have a taste of honey at the same time. So I learned a lot from being on Bob's show so often.
Oh, that's very nice of you, Bo, but I think...
And I also, I also learned from Gene Shepard, who was just an incredible storyteller.
Wonderful at getting the audience to do things in sync. Remember, I really think...
Oh, that's right. He would have people put the radios on the windowsill and turn
right.
the volume down.
There was a movie once.
Network
that had someone go telling people to go to their windows and shout, I'm...
Mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore.
Right, but it was really Gene Shepard who did that first.
Well, he would tell everybody, now lower your volume till you don't hear anything, and put the radio on the windowsill. And when I count three, turn the volume all the way up, and then he would shout something like, you're nothing but a filthy pragmatist. And people all over said that, you know, there was, they didn't know what a pragmatist was, and but... Didn't sound right. Sound good.
Was
and I heard
a triple pragmatist. That's a trident.
And so I heard it coming from some window in my apartment building, and I finally tracked down, and it was a 17-year-old kid who was a Nazi, and and I said, well, what do you like about Shepard's show? He says, I really like it when he plays when he quotes Nietzsche. So everybody listens to radio and in general, and your show in particular, through their own individual filters like that. Unless you have a whole fan club of 17-year-old Nazis that I didn't know about.
I don't know. Let's see. Are you a 17-year-old Nazi? You're on the air. Oops. No, you're not. How about you? You're on the radio. Nobody wants that title, Paul. You're on the air.
What a confluence of such conflagrations. My
That's funny. There
George.
Was a guy who called up a moment ago
with a voice
just like yours.
Listen to that alliteration, too.
But I knew...
No, but the fact that he mentioned the title song had my name in it, it just thrilled me, okay? That's all. Goodbye. I'm getting off.
What title song?
I don't know. His name is George. You're on the radio.
Hi.
Did I cut you off?
And my name isn't George. if it's from Mars, I'm Venus. But anyway, I have the whole Earth catalog in front of me. I'm so delighted that you're on the air, Paul.
Well, Paul, actually, he's not. When I put your phone line on, for some reason it cut his line off.
Oh, dear.
I'm so sorry. I hate to ask you to call back.
Oh, can you get him back?
Well, I'm going to try.
Well, I'm happy to talk to you.
Oh, thank you very much.
I'm not patronizing.
Well, maybe we'll have him in a minute or two, and you'll be able to talk to him.
Well, I have a little juicy tidbit for you. I heard the history of the Pullman on WNYC. And George was for anyone that was a porter on the Pullman trains.
Right.
And nobody that was of color wanted to ever have the name George. So there's the George 1 and the George 2. But I don't know where I'm going with that, so I better dismiss that one. The other thing was, Paul, if he comes back...
Paul, are you back?
I am back.
I am back.
Oh, great.
Oh, great. I'm so excited to talk to you. I'm giddy. But anyway, I very rarely get any sleep because things are, the pulse is going so quick that I have to catch up with everything and I never can get any sleep. So anyway, I wanted to say that this Jimmy Durante song, I wanted to reword the part where you got to wake up every day with a song.
You got to start off each day with a song.
Start off each day with a song. I wanted to change it to Bob.
Even when things go wrong.
Even when things go wrong. I got a million of them. So I wanted to do that. The Bush version is to start off each day with a bomb. So he can go with it.
Or the High Times version.
High Times. What did they do?
Start off each day with a bong.
Oh, that's already done?
Well, no, but the Bush version is start off, you say, with a neutron bong.
Oh, no, that's the new one?
Yeah, a neutron bong destroys the user but leaves their stash intact.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, we have to have the edifices. All right. Well, I'm just speechless because I'm so happy. What is happening to all the manufacturers? I'm just wondering, because now this is dated 1969, the whole World Earth catalog, and it's so chock full of stuff that's in the now could be considered like archival. Where is it reprinted? Is it issued anywhere?
Well, I think they now put out, what's it called? It was either the Whole Earth Review or Co-Evolution Quarterly. I think it's the Whole Earth Review now, and they're in Sausalito. You could probably, do you Google or are you just giddy?
Am I what?
Do you Google or are you just giddy?
I have the happiness gene. I was born with a mentally ill family, so it just went down the line. So anyone that does any stem cell research doesn't want to get my stems or my cells.
You said,
how about my strong things?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if I'll get. Can I get that at a pawn shop with the three balls included? Let me get off. I'm too silly. Let me get off.
I don't think this is late enough. We have a window of opportunity for reality, but you're going too far even for that.
Did you hear this thing? I also scavenge on the street, so that's another reason I'm up all night and try to sell these little trinkets to the dealers. I found things ain't what they used to be. It's a record. Did you ever hear of this? It's an original cast recording, book by Frank Norman, music and lyrics by Lionel Bart.
Oh, yes, I know that.
Oh, yeah?
I mean, I remember, I'm trying to remember whether I ever played any of the cuts on it.
Oh, wow, if you have it, I'd love to hear it, because I don't want to injure the record in case I can get a couple of bucks on it. You can tell I'm poor. poor and proud. Anyway, I haven't been corrupted by money. I haven't had the opportunity. It hasn't come my way. The $2,000 loan at the bank didn't go in because I've never had a credit card. I'm one of the rare people that's 53 years old with no credit card. Never, no. So I've always freelanced. I've never had a steady job. And I'm doing a play now. I'm writing a play.
No wonder you don't get any sleep.
Writers never sleep.
How many hours do you get?
Writers never sleep. Dirt never sleeps.
Two, three, or five.
Yeah. On a good early morning, I might get five between the hours of 5 a.m. and 11.
When you talked about Jimmy Durante's song where he said, you got to start off each day with a song.
Yeah.
I used to wear a lapel button, and it had a photo of W.C. Fields on it. With a quote that he had once said, which is, start off each day with a smile and get it over with.
I love it. Well, wear a smile as an umbrella. Oh, I love you guys, okay? Keep it up.
You too. Thank you very much.
Just carry that trident around any time. I'll recognize you because I haven't seen you guys in person. I remember BAI when it was, I'm 33 years in a rent-stabilized apartment. I remember BAI in the old church. That's where I first walked in and got enlightenment.
Well, it sounds like you brought some light with you, too.
Thank you, dears. All right. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Sure.
You're on the air.
Good morning, gentlemen. Hold
Turn on. Your radio down, please.
It's been done. Sorry, I haven't been drinking tonight, but I'll try to keep up the pace of the evening. It's not a prerequisite. Had a bowl, but had to chase it down with iced tea. I got a couple of reminiscences of San Francisco and the one with Tricky Dick. You mentioned something about the San Francisco phone directory. And when I was, and the weird thing is, I was also, I went to the School of Art and Design also, like our previous caller. But when I was out there in college, there was an article in a Herb Kahn column in the Chronicle that mentioned a page.
Oh, you mean Herb Kane?
Herb Kane, right.
The columnist.
As a matter of fact, I may have heard this, found out about it through listening to WKPFA. That's the Berkeley station, right?
Sounds right.
Yeah, that's the sister station in Pacifica.
Yeah, I discovered that station even though I was in New York when I went to college at the Art Institute, and started listening to the station. And they mentioned one day the Herb Kane column, and had to find the paper because of what had been mentioned, that somebody had run a name and somehow got into the book of Master Beta. And I believe there was a phone number. I didn't call it, but that was and Herb Kane pointed that out. And I don't know if it made it to the next edition because I was that was my last year of school out there. But I guess these things too can get under the radar, even with a the phone company. Hello.
Yeah.
Don't let me hog the conversation. But mentioning Tricky Dick, the president. Do you remember President Nixon? My first day out in San Francisco, just getting settled into the residence club on Nob Hill, and I heard this yelling and whooping in the street. Opened my window and actually saw people dancing in the street. It was the day that Nixon announced that the next day he would resign. And this is my kind of town. And great memories. But speaking of struggle, you know, the critical mass rides, the last couple of nights, the...
you should explain the critical... the critical, what was it? The critical...
The traffic calming rides.
The bicycle riders, right?
The rides that take place in over 300 cities around the world, and in New York at least 15 years, is it, Bob? And they've been playing up in the media the last 2 days to Channel 4 tonight that the police department would not tolerate any breaking of the traffic laws. That you cannot ride in a group, you can't block intersections, hold up traffic. So I am putting the word out, the Paul Revere radio stations, to anybody with a bicycle or a pair of roller skates, get up to Union Square tomorrow night and... let's make it interesting. If they're going to arrest everybody, let's fill up both rivers.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, What time do you want people to show up with bicycles, roller skates? How about skateboards?
Skateboards, baby carriages,
mm-hmm.
or perambulators.
How about those little motorcycles that they're trying to eliminate?
I don't care for them much.
No,
but
I don't like them too much either. They're noisy and really dangerous, I think.
Yeah, but this is...
You could get the Segway Brigade.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, under your own power, and if you've got a little lawnmower engine under you, that's not your power. That's...
Didn't you ride a bike at one time, Paul? I seem to remember you had a bike.
That's the only thing I can ride.
You don't have a driver's license still?
No, no. I never learned how to drive.
As the previous caller mentioned, I never got a... I'm 52. I never got a credit card. I never got a driver's license. People's Republic of Brooklyn, you know, there are better ways than burning a fossil.
Hello.
Hello, Bob.
Yes, hi.
Hey, it's Bob Dobbs.
Hey, Bob Dobbs.
You got my email where I promoted my interview, Dialogue with LaRouche. Did you get that?
I did. I didn't open it. I was I've been beset by a lot of things, and I haven't opened up a lot of email, but...
Well...
Was it a long interview?
Yeah, it's on the LaRouche website. They're so amazed they wanted me to join their group. I think it was so good. I think they're going to make a religion out of it. It was just, it's a lot of good, interesting questions.
Enough about you. What do you think about Paul Krasner, and won't you say something to Paul? And...
Well, no, you certainly have a lot, but I did send him an email today.
I've been beset, too, and haven't opened it yet.
Okay, anyways, listening to the album, I recognize the laughter of my friend Susie Williams and Jerry Fialka. I can hear them. They're sitting in the front row, I imagine, of wherever you taped that. And,
that's true. You got them.
Beg your pardon?
You recognize their laugh, yes.
Yeah, Susie and Jerry. And I was just talking to them today, and I said, you know, I get a chance to talk to Paul every now and then. He's always on Bob Fass. I said, next time he's on, something will be talked about, and so all of a sudden you're on tonight. So, and then it fit, circled back into them. So I just thought that was nice synchronicity. Because I can tell, you can hear Susie. She's the main laugher on the album.
Oh, she was the only one there, really. The others were just laugh track.
That's right. Yeah. And have you heard her sing?
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, she's terrific.
Yeah, she's a real asset there in Venice. Asset.
You know, there's certain people, performers like her, you think they should be stars. But, you know, sometimes it's their unwillingness to compromise that keeps them from being stars.
Well, she was a star here in New York in the 70s. Madonna, young Madonna, came up to her in the early 80s and sussed her out and walked away in a huff. And I don't know if you know that whole history. I mean, Saturday Night Live, the gang used to go and see her sing at some club here in New York.
I didn't meet her until I was in Venice, actually.
Right. But I'm looking forward to hearing the album. And I guess that's all I have to say, Bob. I really enjoyed the show tonight. I taped a lot of it, and I'll send it to Susie.
Well,
right, and I will
ask her to send me a CD of her singing.
Okay.
All right.
We'll do that.
All right. I will open up that conversation you had with LaRouche.
Yeah, it's really interesting. It was on KPFK, and Roy Hollywood was amazed by it, because I go into all the philosophy that LaRouche talks about. He has quite an interesting intellectual history, and he's got this whole LaRouche youth movement around him. They caused quite a scene at the Boston Convention. Even Ted Kennedy complimented LaRouche because they run around singing Beethoven and Bach and stuff.
Was there a highlight of the dialogue with him for you?
There were several. I asked him about his old life with Ralph Schoeman. You know, he and Ralph Schoeman were buddies in the Social Party, whatever it was called in the late 50s, Socialist Party. And they used to, you know, discuss and argue about what to do with the party. And then Schoeman goes off and works with Bertrand Russell, and LaRouche goes off and writes books about how Bertrand Russell's the most evil man in the world. The most evil man of the 20th century. So there's an interesting parallel, and here I'm talking to LaRouche on KPFK, and Ralph Schulman's on the same station.
Is it a parallel or a divergence?
Divergence.
Yeah, right. Well, there are 75 divergences that you can have if you become a martyr.
How many?
Out of prison?
What'd you say, Paul?
Is Lyndon LaRouche out of prison?
Oh, he got out in 94. He worked for Clinton, supported Clinton, and so Clinton got him out. He's been out for 10 years. He's got a
Clinton
movement.
Wait, are you saying that Clinton pardoned LaRouche?
Yeah. They gave a book. They did a great biography of George Bush, and they gave it to Clinton in Texas. I think it was Harley Schlanger did. And Clinton looked at it and says, man, I can't wait to read this in the White House. And he's a fan of LaRouche, Clinton is. I mean, they had the same kind of thinking.
Well, so you don't think he's nuts?
No, well, you hear this interview. LaRouche is nuts, but compared to Americans, he's sane.
Well, well, compared to Zusane, he's sane. But he also said, didn't Didn't LaRouche say, and one of the things that made him like Clinton was it's a question of what is a nut? I mean, what is a nut, he said. Is a nut, or is that... It depends upon what you mean by nut.
That's right.
Yeah.
What's the context?
Right.
Anyway, the recommend okay, thank you.
Thank you, Bob Dodd. Bob Dobbs is the keeper of the McLuhan Archive.
As a matter of fact, we're having a McLuhan International Festival in Toronto from October 8th to the 17th. Just as the man who created the Toronto Film Festival, which is now the biggest, best festival in film world, he now wants to make McLuhan, just like the Joyce Festival in Ireland, he wants to make McLuhan a big deal in October. So look on the website, the McLuhan International Festival of the Future, and I'll be doing a lot of stuff up there.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Oh, listen, Bob, one other thing. Will you take that damn pipe out of your mouth?
You tell Ivan Stang I'm not a schizophrenic. Okay, Paul?
I'll tell him that both of you said that.
Yes. Okay, good night.
Good night. Oh, I hope, Paul, I hope I don't cut... Okay, Paul, still there.
I'm still here.
Well, this is great. We've only managed to cut you off once tonight. Usually at three... Yeah.